whole animals. So the halakha is, we essentially split the distributed part of the time down. And therefore, the one who wants the whole thing gets 3/4, and the one who claims half of it gets 1/4. And we showed them all, asked the question, why don't we say, Migo? Let's say that we should give the person who wants half of it, we should give him that, because he could have claimed the whole thing was his, and then he would have ended up with half. So let's give him, because of Migo, the half that he is claiming. So the Rishonim had various approaches to that question. I think we had mentioned also, just as a side point, the very sharp observation by the Kadosh Baruch Hu that in a sense, the Migo is playing a crucial role here. Because if it were not for the Migo, really we wouldn't have said that this individual should get 1/4 and the other guy should get 3/4. Because really, the halacha would not have been yacholkim at all. It would have been yehemunah. Why? Because if you recall, one of the major premises to allow for yacholkim, Tosfos on the top of Beis Amud Aleph, said that the case of yehemunah and yacholkim are basically the same kind of cases. Two fighting over a talis and two people who both entrusted a sum of money to a third party and disputed how much. So Tosfos assumes, based on the Gemara, that those two cases are basically parallel. And what was the key difference? Dichol Yosemites. So the Peyeshua raised the question that in this scenario, where it's 3/4 and 1/4, we go back to the problem of any Dichol Yosemites. There's no logical way in which that's true. So if that's not possible to be Yosemites, but the whole premise was that Zichol Yosemes would normally achloku because they could have both picked it up at the same time. But that would not have resulted in a 3/4, 1/4 split. So that split is actually not Zichol Yosemes. So therefore, we should have said Yehei Munach in this case. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu points out that it's really the Migo that saves it from Yehei Munach. So in essence, that's really why you could answer the Migo question. And he also notes, based on that, that that's not called Migo Lahotzi, because the alternative situation would result in either of them having it. So we don't look at this against Tosfos, we don't look at this as a situation where one is coming to be Motzi, what the other guy would rightfully have, because if it wasn't for him using the Migo, the other guy would get nothing. It's a very sharp point.
So what exactly is Migo according to the...
It says the Migo makes it that since there was a way that this person could have gotten what he was looking for, that's why he gets anything. That's why we don't put it aside and
leave it. We don't give him a full Migo. But the
right, because the Migo doesn't work that much to put it back into play normally, that at least we're going to do some kind of Yachloku instead of Yehemunah. And then we do Yachloku based on the 50% of the disputed territory. That's but the Migo Lahotzi would not have been the answer according to him, because it's not a question of Lahotzi, because the alternative would not have resulted in this guy having more. But as we noted yesterday, so Tosfos and many Rishonim do assert Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina, and that that's the relevant answer here. So we did discuss yesterday why you might not use that answer, either because you don't think this is a situation of Lahotzi, we've talked about that at some length already, or because you don't agree that there is such a rule of Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina, which is a Machlokas Rishonim. There certainly are Rishonim who dispute this rule. And there is a Machlokas about this quote in the Ramah. The Ramah quotes two days. First he says, Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. But then he says, Yesh Omrim that we do say. He quotes the Shulas to Rivash to that point. And the Shas says it's a Sveka Ladin. So in terms of the Rishonim, that was a Machlokas Rishonim, leaving somewhat of an unclear conclusion, Lahalacha. So we had started to set up the issue yesterday, why should we not say Migo Lahotzi? If you assume like those Rishonim that we don't say it, so why should we not say it? So we had two broad Rachman. One, you could say it's a quantitative issue, there simply is not enough power. We know that Mahotzi is a high threshold. Rov cannot be Motzi in a Muchzak. Muchzak, by its very nature, represent something that's hard to be. So maybe Migo simply is not strong enough. Or, alternatively, maybe it's not about that at all. Maybe it's not a question of strength, but it's a question of function, that maybe Migo simply doesn't do that. Maybe Migo simply doesn't move things from place to place. Maybe it has a whole different way of operating. So the idea that it's about strength, it's about power, is probably represented by the Ketzos. The Ketzos essentially sees it that way. And therefore, there are all kinds of nafkaminas that will flow from that. For example, that if the opposition is a toughness, let's say the opposition is not an actual chazaka, but it's just somebody holding on to an item, but doesn't necessarily have it in such a way that indicates actual factual ownership. So then the source says, Migo will win. Because even though that involves moving something from place to place, but it's not the same type of face-off as Migo versus a chazaka. And there were others who disagreed, and of course that's very relevant to the first mission of Bava Metzia, because we're not sure what status to give the two Ochsen and the Palace. So the Ketzos has this essential position, and it also represents itself that if a person with a Migo is up against a Chezkes Marakama, let's say, the person who he's fighting with is not a person who's currently in possession, but he's somebody who historically had only once. So that in that Ketzos's general theory, as he expressed it to Moshiach Shmaiser as well, is a weaker kind of chazaka. And the part of the terminology overlaps, so it's hard sometimes to keep it straight. But an actual muhzak, we'll try to use that phrase to distinguish them, somebody who's holding on to it right now, that's a very strong proof. While Chezkes Marakama is much less. It just means that we know you owned it once upon a time. It's essentially the same kind of thing that the Gemara has called the Chazaka Eikar. That we know this was true yesterday. We have no current proof that it's true today. So things change in life. So that's not a very solid proof. The fact that something was true yesterday is certainly not 100% proof that it's true today. It just means it's all we have to go on sometimes. So I'll prefer a chazaka meikar to nothing, but it's not the same thing as a muhzak, especially in the view of the Sos HaChoshen, as he says in the Shmaisa and elsewhere. Yes, sir?
The Shmaisa is in?
The Shmaisa is in Gimocha. Check it again.
I think we said Dalet in Shia.
Dalet Chokim?
I only wrote Dalet, but
okay,
I
so then check there. Check both. Check Dalet first. So, if not, I'll give it to you later. So, essentially, the Ketzos's position, therefore, is that it can win against the Marakama, and that's okay, because it's not that it can't do anything, it's simply that it's not strong against the Muxak, and the Marakama is not a Muxak. Now, this may be an explicit Gemara. This is perhaps the most likely interpretation in the Gemara in Bava Batra. I think Rimo was here the other day from Yishe Lev, from learning Cheskes Avatim. Don't get me wrong, but learning Cheskes Avatim, because every day there's another Gemara from Cheskes Avatim that comes up. You learn Rishayim Oksim, many different sugyas and early Rambans in Bava Batra that keep coming up. So this is one of the long list. So the Gemara there has Machlokesin between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. And they seem identical. Apparently, there's a crucial difference, especially because the Gemara splits the Psak. So there are two situations in which somebody claims to have bought something, and he has a shtar to back it up. And the other party says that your shtar is fake. And the first party with the shtar, he whispers to Rava, attack a funny thing, it actually is fake. But I have a real one, and I lost it, so I brought this fake one. And the Makkos are showing what we mean by fake, but for now we'll just call it that. So what should the story be for this person? So Rava says that we should give it to him. Essentially it sounds like amigo. He says, Malu the Shakir. Seems to work off the assumption that he could have been believed with his fake shtar. So, therefore, we believe him that he actually bought it. And Rabbi Yosef says, no, the shtar is worthless. He just told us the shtar is nothing. It's a piece of clay. So why should we count it for anything? So it sounds like that's a situation of migo lahosi. The person wants to claim to be a purchaser to get the property away from someone else. And here his claim is supported by amigo. So perhaps the whole machlokas, and this is how some of the Rishonim read it, perhaps the same the whole machlokas is, do we say amigo lahotzi or not? Do we say that this malo shaker amigo works in order to get him the property? Or should we say that no, that he's trying to extract something and therefore his amigo doesn't count? So if you want to read like that, as some of the Rishonim do. So great, it's a straight out machlokas in the Gemara, whether we say migo lahotzi or not. And then, to support the ksos, you could note the conclusion of the Gemara. The Gemara splits the psak. The Gemara says in the first case, which was a case of land, so that situation will give it to the purchaser. Because what the operative debate there, the purchaser is right now on the land. The guy who's fighting with him is not a muhsak, he's not on the land himself. He is what? A marikama. And the second case of the Gemara, it's not about land, it's about money. So, or we'll say the lender rather than the purchaser. So the lender wants to get money out from the other guy. So we say that the other guy gets to hold on to it. That's from Yosef's view. He wins in that case. The muhsak, the money, gets to hold on to it. So one could read this Gemara very, very well for themselves, that the whole debate is, can we say migo lahotzi? And in the second case, it's literally lahotzi. So therefore, we do not say it. We follow Yosef that migo doesn't work. And the first case is not against an actual muhsak, he's against the marikama. And therefore, he's able to win with his migo. Again, that's essentially the ksos's position, that he can win against the marikama, not against the muhsak. Aaron?
There isn't a specific case in the original owner was not on the land. Even if he was on the land,
he still may not. Well, the question of whether it's a chazaka on the
car.
Right.
No, I mean, at the most, he has tvisis card.
Well, who has tvisis?
The marikama.
Well, the Marikama may have an action if he actually has a chazak of having lived there and he's there. So then he would have a real chazak. But in any event, so it seems like reading this Gemara, it works out very well for the ksos. Now, why would you not say it's a slam dunk to the ksos? Because there are a lot of other ways to read this Gemara as the Rishonim themselves invoke. First of all, not only for the ksos, this could have worked out fine for Tosos and Bavin Zia that base of Adalah. And the Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina. So we could have read this Gemara as saying the same thing, Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina, that the whole machlokas is about whether or not Migo Lahotzi. And the conclusion is, when dealing with an actual muhsak, at least, Lo Amrina. So Tosis does not have to deal with this Gemara at all to defend its position, except that they do. Tosis on Beis Aleph does address this Gemara despite the lack of necessity, and points out that here it's a little bit different because it is a super migo. It's not a normal migo. It's a super migo. Why is it super? Because Yiboy Shasif, that perhaps there's a whole new level of migo that this person didn't have to open his mouth in the first place. That maybe migo has a certain weakness when at least it would require you to express an alternative taina which might be false. So maybe you'll have some hesitation to do that. But if you could have gotten away without saying anything, you wouldn't have even been put in a position where you'd have to express a lie. So then maybe that's even better, and we can't use this Gemara to derive any quality. So that itself, that's a whole disputed concept, whether or not there is such an idea of migo the iba yishasik. There's this concept of a super migo, that if you don't require you to speak at all, and the alternative that makes your migo even stronger. And as we noted, it works better if you believe that migo is about, let's say, credibility. So then here the credibility is perhaps even stronger when you spoke when you otherwise wouldn't have had to speak.
Are you guys, I think, synonymous with Pesha?
No. Tasha Asar may be synonymous with Rigo, but that's a topic of major debate, and then in which case it would be relevant. So it theoretically could be synonymous.
Now, isn't the Nemanis of Pichasa that you didn't have the same thing, once or at least one shot, and
possibly,
once open the rest, so I believe you.
So yes, possibly, but not necessarily. Pasha Asar could involve other things, so there are many who distinguish between Pasha Asar and Rigo, and there are those who imagine. We actually didn't pursue that whole line of discussion so much. It's more in the area of, we didn't care into so much analysis. So whether or not Pasha Asar and Rigo are the same thing is a little bit, or types of the same thing, is a discussion itself. But Ivo Eshasek is one thing that could shuffle this Gemara around. Also, the fact that some of the Rishonim say that this is never a great Migo to begin with, because why are we assuming he would have been believed with his claim the shtar was good? So maybe the shtar would ultimately be upheld, but some of the Rishonim understand that it wasn't upheld yet. He's all working off the premise that he could have it upheld. So either direction, you could say this is a better Migo, you could say this is a weaker Migo. You could also say it's a weaker Migo because it's premised on a sheker. So the Rishonim have different ways of reading this Gemara that confuse it a little bit.
When he first makes his claim that it's a good shtar, when he just says, here's the shtar, why do we accept his second statement of, okay, it's false shtar, but I had a real one? Why do we accept that? Because he already made... Right. No, he already established... isn't it chozer return?
So there's something strange about the whole Gemara. I think I mentioned this festival very recently. Because the first thing wasn't a tanya. He whispered it into the ear of...
No, I'm saying his first thing was that he said, here's a shtar, right?
And that's his only claim.
Right, so...
He doesn't change his claim. The fact that he can whisper in the middle of a Din Torah proceeding, I'm not sure how to explain that. Like I mentioned, that discussed this with various ones in his capacity as a former head of the Bezdin. It seems like that's a halachic violation. You shouldn't be able to talk ex parte to a dying. So how that Gemara... Was Rabbi acting in the capacity to judge here? Was he maybe atoning, so to speak? Was he maybe expressing what he thought the din should be? It's a question in that Gemara B'chlal, which I don't know what the answer is, and if anybody happens to discover one, I'd be interested to hear it. I would think that as a normal rule of thumb, to whisper something that the other guy can't hear, to a dying is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa for a dying to listen. We'll see still shame b'shal. So there's something procedurally strange about this case. But in terms of the closer retellings, so he basically makes one claim. He says, here, this is my shtar, and I'm claiming that it's mine. He doesn't change his claim. It's just that we have some extra credibility, and that's also part of it, right? That he doesn't change his claim, and we don't have a reis on his claim. The only reis that comes from his whispering in the ears of Rabbah, and it's a question how much to grant that. But it doesn't seem to be the case of the closer retelling. So, in other words, it's just worth knowing that other Rishonim have other readings of this Gemara. But there's one very plausible reading of the Gemara that there's a machlokus about Migalotzi, and we work very well for Ixos, and theoretically well for Tosus Bubnitsi also, but especially for more detail for the Ixos. That is a machlokus in the Gemara and Bavastra whether or not we say Migalotzi. And the conclusion is we don't say it against an actual Muxach, but we would say it against a Marakan. Now, it's also worth noting that the same Trumas Adeshin that we've seen now for a third time, Trumas Adeshin, sorry?
The other way to read the Gemara, isn't that what the Ketos is saying?
The Ketos is saying that what we just said is the way the Ketos is saying.
Right, so what's the alternative?
Well, Ibo Eshasek is a factor, or the Sheker was a factor, but it's not upheld here, it's a factor. There are many other views of the Rishonim that take this out of its role as definitive. But probably the most intuitive way of reading the Sugya works very well for themselves. And it's also worth noting that the Trimas Hadeshin, which keeps coming up again and again, part of the value of Chazar, it's that same Trimas Hadeshin and Shemi Adali that we keep coming back to. So he is really the polar opposite of themselves. Because the Trimas Hadeshin, if you recall, when he put down Kol Dalim Gvar, and he expressed the Shita that Otsim is not a real Chazaka, same Shita keeps coming up again and again. So that Trumas Hadeshin says that a rove, in the case of Shlam Oksum Metalis, a rove would make a difference because there isn't a real Chazaka here. So therefore, even though Rov can be motzi mina mochsa, it can't be motzi for shnai mochsim betalas. Aye, says the Truma Sadeshan, but what about Tosfos? He seems to side with Tosfos. What about Tosfos that says it's a case of migo lahotzi lo amrina? So apparently you would consider it being motzi. So says the Truma Sadeshan, no, fight my migo, so that even a shtach achiza can do it. You don't need a real chazak. So it's the opposite of what Tosfos says. Tosfos says that a migo could win unless it was a real motza. And the Truma Sadeshan is saying, no, that a migo can't win against any type of tfisa. And that even in the situation where Rove would work, migo would not work, which is the opposite of what Ketzos said. In line with the Ketzos also, so he suggests, he also seems to say that if there's a shtar on your side, so you could win with a migo lahotzi. Also consistent with this whole idea that Migo is just simply not strong enough, but a shtar could make it stronger. And when we say a shtar, there were a couple of Gemaras, you can look at them again from the Marmakomos, that make sense within this perspective. And it could be explained based on this idea that you can be motzi if you have a shtar on your side. So clearly it's not a shtar which does the whole job, or else you wouldn't need the Migo. But a shtar meaning that it establishes enough that you are entitled to something. That even if you don't paskin that shtar is considered to be as if it's already collected, so there is some level of motzi going on, but apparently, as Zechronim explained within the Ksos, the fact that you have a shtar is enough to knock the other person's chazaka off center and to strengthen the migo, and you'll win with that. So again, so what are some ramifications of the Ksos' view that migo lahotzi is all about strength? It'll work if it's not an actual mosuk, if it's only a tafus. It'll work if it's a shtamar kama, as opposed to not an actual mosuk. And it'll work if it's together with a shtar. In other words, anything that strengthens the migo may help, and anything that weakens the other guy's chazaka may also help. Because it's all about strength, and not necessarily about not shifting property from one space to the other. So we mentioned also that this could correlate to some general explanations of how migo works. There are those who say that migo is essentially a kind of rove, or that it's built on a rove, that it can't be stronger than a rove, because it's premised on the fact that most people are aware of their alternative kindness, and not everybody's going to be aware. So it's built on the structure of a rove, that's how some understand. And therefore, again, you can understand that strength-wise, it's limited to being like a rope. Alternatively, you could also say that it's like an umna. An umna, we discussed from day one, it's a little bit of a question how much you can do with an umna. That basically the dying is evaluating what the likelihood that one person is right and one person is wrong. So maybe the fact that he could have lied with a better lie seems to make us think he's not lying. Maybe that's a kind of umbra. Maybe there's also a question as to how powerful an umbra is. While there are other explanations in the Afro-Roman that basically seem to understand that ego is about leaving things the way they are. And that essentially it's something that creates a suffix enough that you can't be motzi from that person. But it's not about those, it's not an actual viewer to allow you to take away from somebody else. Or we mentioned, for example, of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who at least the way we understood it, who pointed out there's a difference between somebody who's defending himself and somebody who's being motzi min hamochsa. If you defend yourself, so you have all the claims of defense in front of you. And theoretically, you should take the best one. And if you don't, it means we'll give you some extra points for that credibility. But if you're on the attack, we'll give the example of the joke when somebody says that pot that you borrowed from me and you returned it, it's broken. And the other guy responds, and first of all, it was broken when you gave it to me. Second of all, I returned it to you in perfect condition. Third of all, I never borrowed your pot in the first place. So the point being, the guy's on the defensive, so he pulls out the whole list, every claim that he could possibly use, view. So hopefully you'll use your best plan. But if you're coming on the attack, so you don't come with three different reasons why you should upset reality. You have one reason why you should upset reality. So we don't credit the alternative as much. So that might be another explanation of why ego simply is not about being motzim and amitza. We also mentioned the Meitzer Eloi, who is a Rebbe here in our yeshiva. So Meitzer Eloi gave an explanation of ego, which is very important because it addresses one of the fundamental questions that people have about ego. There are many who ask the question, many yeshivas in general ask the question, that ego seems to be self-defeating, that ego should only work once in history. But once we know about ego, so it should knock itself out of existence. Because if a person knows there is such a concept, that they'll get extra credibility for not using their better claim, so then they'll lie that way. Without the existence of the concept of ego, so you're right, the fact that somebody doesn't use his better lie is noteworthy. But once I tell you there's a concept called ego, that we're going to believe you for not using the better lie, so now I realize I'm a smart guy, I'll purposely use the less good lie, and I'll win still, and I'll be more believed because of that principle.
Right? That seems pointless if you're going to lie, then you might as well have the other lie, and then pick one anyway.
So that's essentially what the Meitzer says, that ego doesn't mean you're going to believe. Because you're right, it does undermine its own existence. Because once we have a concept that's codified in ego, then that becomes a reason to lie with the second best line. So all it means is that we have to essentially leave things at a standstill. That we can't say ego does work with something. Because then it comes back into existence. It's a circle, right? It's a way that will believe you. On the one hand, it makes sense to say we should give you credibility because you didn't use the stronger lie. But that rule gives you a reason not to use a stronger lie. But if we get rid of that rule, then it goes back into existence again, because it becomes true again that you're better off not using your stronger lie. So we can't rely totally on ego, because it doesn't really tell us that you're not lying. But we can't negate it either, because then it becomes true. So essentially what ego does is that it knocks everything down to a draw. It knocks everything down to a tie, and so we can leave things the way they are, but we can't be motzim and amotzim. Okay, so far so good. This is complicated stuff. We're doing it relatively quickly, so please stop me if there's a question there.
Yeah? In general, in Halacha, isn't there, I know the Gemara about Vastras has written that we should teach people things because maybe they'll misuse the Halachos. But isn't this a general topic in Halacha that if you teach people the Halachos of Bittul Barov, so they'll use it. Meaning the halachism can be abused by anybody. So is this only a topic by Niko?
So that we shouldn't teach it or we should teach it?
No, I mean, I think Gemara concludes that you should teach it.
Well, so here the question is not whether you teach it or not. It's just that it seems that the existence of the concept undermines this concept. Because the whole premise is you have a reason not to lie. But once we codify this as a concept, now you have a reason to be lying and move this time. But if we use that reason to not...
I mean, it's no longer Mavar.
Right. So you can't say it's an actual viewer. Because the fact is, the existence of the principle gives you a reason.
But according to Kohl HaTaina, then
it's a little bit less relevant. Right? This is working off the potential viewer and the fact that maybe it's coming as a viewer, but it's limited because of its circular nature. It's a fascinating point. So then, this got us to the Shubhas HaRashba. And to an explanation that we liked that was in a journal based on the Shubhas HaRashba, which addresses a lot of things and all of the points of ego that we spoke about. But essentially, Shubhas HaRashba, if you look at it once, you don't notice that it says anything so fascinating, and you think it's basically in the camp of the Ktos, which was said, that it's a question of power. Ego holds the lower arena, and he discusses the fact that there are Rishonim who debate this point. And then the Rashba on the surface seems to be saying something very simple. Gimel definitely worth seeing inside. That he essentially says that he thinks we svara, it's correct, lahotzi lo arinon, that it doesn't make sense that it should be motzi. The question was asked, since Nigo is daraisa, why shouldn't it be motzi? And ultimately the answer is, that it doesn't seem to be mistaber that it should take money away from anyone, it's enough that it's there to uphold a chazak, or uphold the default. So this essay that we noted asked a couple of questions on this. So first of all, what's the question? Migo is deraisa, so it should be mozi. What does being deraisa have to do with its level of power? Rove is deraisa too. The fact that it's deraisa doesn't mean that it can do anything. And what's his answer? His answer that, well, it makes sense, that doesn't really tell us what it's good. So we mentioned an explanation as follows that was very relevant for all of Migo. It looks like we will have to carry over a few points into tomorrow, but it shouldn't be a problem. We'll do Parsha and Chazar tomorrow. We'll still be on schedule. But essentially, he said as follows. So what can you glean from the Rashba's comment that it's the Raisa and therefore it should work? Apparently, what's the Rashba of the Shoal who asked the Rashba this question, if he doesn't argue on this premise, what's the basic premise? Is that Migo means that the Taina that you could have used is actually being used by you. It's actually in effect. And therefore, you would be fair in asking and assuming that whatever that Taina can do, it should do. If that Taina could be Motzim and Amlopsak, so it should be Motzim and Amlopsak here too, in the alternative. And that the point of mentioning it's deraisa is that maybe you would have said, well, yeah, but it's limited because it's only a derabbanan mechanism, so we can only do certain things with derabbanan. So, no, we know that's not true because it's deraisa. So the whole nature of that point is to assume that you should have a full effect of the time. So therefore, what does Migo mean, according to the Rashba? That whatever your alternative taina you could have used, you get it. That's a special chiddush haTorah of Migo, that the taina that you're not taking but is available to you is being credited to you. It's in effect fully. So therefore, that's the opening premise, that whatever it could do, if this taina would have been motzi in the mosa, theoretically it should be motzi here as well. So why is it not? Because the Rashba understands it as follows. So what is Migo? Migo is a koach haTorah, the kugel of the Torah. The Torah gives a special leniency that you have access to kindness you're not actually putting forward yourself. So who does it make sense should have this power? Who should have this power? So it makes sense that it's only a defender who should have this power. That perhaps the special kugel of the Torah, that somebody who's defending his property, has this right. But somebody who's a motzi, somebody who's attacking somebody else, why should we give him any special tools? Whatever he uses, he uses. And whatever works, works. But why should we give him the special kula of the Torah of Migo? So here he says now a fascinating point. So the phrase Migo lahotzi lo amrina, how do we translate that phrase? It doesn't mean that a Migo is ineffective against the motzi. It means that we don't even use Migo in that context. That whenever Migo is used, it's very powerful. It's 100% effective. But Migo is only applicable in certain conditions. And therefore, it makes sense, says the Rashba, that it should only be applied to a defender. So when a defender uses Migo, he gets it in full power. But a Motzi and a Mosar doesn't have the whole concept of Migo. So that's what it means. It's different from, say, in holchi b'mamanach or a rove. A rove doesn't win against the mosa. A migo, it's not a question of whether it wins against the mosa. It's a question of whether it's even brought into the conversation. And that's what he's saying here, that lo amrina is not in existence against the mosa. And that's why it doesn't win, not because it's lacking any power. Okay?
So, in the case of the
so you're open to a couple different questions, but the Rishonim who say Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina are seeing him as an attacker, and therefore said that Migo wouldn't even come into play.
But it's supposed to be cool, he's trying to protect property.
But he's trying to extract something from the other guy's home. He's apparently the other guy.
And you can always make that argument.
Not necessarily. Sometimes somebody's coming to attack you, and then you can use your Migo. You have your computer, and I say it's mine.
And if you have a...
I'm just trying to get towards mine, but I'm really taking it away from you.
But I have no claim to it. It looks like it all. So I'm the one who has the burden of proof. So that makes you the defendant. So that's a fascinating point, and he uses it to explain at least two other points that we'll have to go into more detail about tomorrow. And again, it should be a problem to cover everything tomorrow. But he uses it also to explain the view of the Rambam and the Rimi Gash, that Migo Lachture Mishua Lomri, that those Rishonim, against a lot of other Rishonim, say that Migo doesn't get you out of the Shul. So why not? So again, he says in the same context what that phrase means, so that Migo is simply not applied in the context of the Shul. Not that it's not strong enough, but that it's not relevant in the context of the Shul. So especially if you say that the Migo is there to support a defender. So what basis do we have to say that the Torah, which requires Shvuas, sometimes it's Chazal, sometimes the Torah, that requires Shvuas, for what reason should the Torah also give a power to someone to get out of it because of the Migo? So it would be the same thing, that those Rishonim would say, well, I'm reading that the whole concept of Migo doesn't apply in that setting. And then he goes on to make another very important point, and we'll end with this for today. What about the Rishonim who say Migo Lahotzi Amrina? Now again, significant Rishonim say that, that Migo does work Lahotzi. So then, it makes sense, you only have to argue with half the Rashba. But the Rashba is basically making two points. One is that Migo gives you the full power of whatever alternative China. And it only makes sense to give that power to someone who's defending. So the Rishonim who say Migo Lahotzi Amrina agree with the first half and not the second half. They agree that Migo gives you the full power. So a claim that would have been Motzi and Amotza works as well. And just they argue about who gets this point. So it's important because it's surprising otherwise, because you have Rishonim who flip from one end of the spectrum to the other. You have some of the Rishonim who say Migo Lahotzi Amrina. They apparently think that a Migo is at most like a robe or less, because robe is not Mosim and Amotza. And neither is Migo, and robe perhaps does more. While other Rishonim will say Migo is Mosim, those who say that it is, like the Rabban, for example, so then they're going to say that it's much more powerful than a robe. So the answer is, it's not really relevant to matching it up against the robe. That the question is just whether you say Migo or not. It's not a question of how strong it is. Whatever Migo is used is very strong. It's only the only kudas hamachlokus is Migo a part of the conversation. And just to address one more point about the fact that there are Rishonim who say Migo lahotzi amrina, even though they have to acknowledge that we don't follow a robe lahotzi. So how would you explain how Migo ends up stronger than a robe? So it could be a super robe, but it's probably not. We pointed out that it's probably not a question of strength and superior powers, but it's a question more of just function. And what is robe? So robe means something is definitely true. By its very nature, it doesn't, because there's a means. If a mirror exists, so a robe clearly doesn't mean that something is always true, or else it wouldn't be called a robe. The whole phrase indicates that there's a minority also. There's a minority that's sometimes not true. So robe, by definition, doesn't mean something is definitely true. It means that there's enough percentage that's true that if you have to pick a path, it makes sense to follow this path. Follow the path that's more likely. But we don't ever believe that it means it's definitely true. It means it's the more logical path to follow because it has more points on its side. But maybe Migo is more than that. Maybe Migo is a clarification. A person is definitely telling the truth, if you understand it that way. And therefore, it makes sense that Migo should be relied upon in a way that Rove isn't. There's no reason to use Rove to take away from a Mosak, because the person is A, a Mosak, and B, there's no proof that he's definitely wrong. And in the case of Migo, maybe the Migo is solid proof that the other guy is 100% correct. So we still have to fill in some points. So what will we fill in tomorrow? So we have to fill in a little bit about Migo Mimamo Lumamo, and why we would say that, why we wouldn't say that. It's a shorter topic. And also compared to Migo Hotzi. And also the question of Migo Zahalaza, which the two topics are tied in very strongly. Hopefully we should be able to get that done tomorrow, no problem.